This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 26th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes the return of the Sons of Priscille July 20th at 3 p.m. at 21C Hotel in Bentonville. The Sons of Priscille will perform jazz, samba, and bossa nova with a flavor and passion one might think could only be found at a nightclub in Brazil. This series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. Tickets available online at KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the National Veterans Golden Age Games are set to take over the region this weekend, with events from badminton and golf to swimming and checkers. We meet a 79-year-old Vietnam War veteran who hopes to win in his many competitions.
We also meet an Arkansas elder who decided to obtain his GED many many years after his high school aged years. Plus, as the eyes of many are on the soccer fields in Brazil, we'll attend a sports match of a different nature, polo, in Bentonville.
But first, the first of a series of meetings looking at overhauling the state's workforce training programs took place earlier this week. Republican Senator Jane English of North Little Rock cast a crucial vote for the private option earlier this year in exchange for promises of changes to workforce development programs. Speaking as the chair of the Joint Performance Review Committee, English said she wants to direct the focus to people, not necessarily college-bound.
Our concern continues to be, and needs to be, is how do we reach the rest of those kids, the other? So the 40% that are going to college, that's great, but what about the rest of the folks?
Republican Terry Rice, another chair on the Joint Performance Review Committee, says he wants the review of workforce programs to find what works, eliminate what doesn't, and focus on providing skills to give people livable incomes.
I'm anxious to see what comes out of these meetings because we know that we're in a new dynamic in our world today. I think we all see that. Everybody said, let's go back to the good old days. Well, you know, we all define those good old days different, and the thing is, times change and we change, and we want to have to do some things different.
In the months ahead, legislators will have to determine what reforms might look like as they attempt to more fully develop their assessment of what the state should do.
A group in Fayetteville wants to increase one of the city's larger parks. Max Mahler is one of the organizers of the Friends of Gully Park, which has started a campaign to add roughly 10 acres to the park in East Fayetteville.
Our proposition at this point is to acquire the land for park space. We've talked with several people in the city, and what we've come to find out is that there's about 7,000 people that live in a one-mile radius of Gully Park, which is about 10% of the city of Fayetteville live within basically walking distance of this area. And Gully Park is really a pretty special park. It's one of the only parks in the area that's not designated for things specific recreation activities, which actually lends itself to a higher utility value because you can do just about anything with open space.
Mahler says the group is trying to raise money to buy the land and two adjacent lots with houses on them through the crowdfunding site Indiegogo. But the group isn't working alone. Mahler says it's coordinating with the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Commission. Aside from the deadline for the crowdfunding campaign, Mahler says the group is working against the clock as well as any other potentially better offers to the landowner.
She's actually had a couple of offers that we feel fortunate that she has turned down, several offers that they've given her 24 hours to respond, which has put, unfortunately, I feel like puts a lot of pressure on an older woman. But we feel very fortunate that she's had the tenacity to stick in there with us. But I think that she's definitely an advocate for what we're doing and wants it to be as park as much as we do. And her husband that passed away, and we know that Ben and I, from long conversations, sitting down talking to him about the cow patty run, know that it was his goal for it to be a park.
More information about the effort can be found at gullypark.com.
For the better part of a year, the Beaver Watershed Alliance has been conducting an opportunity assessment on the West Fork of the White River. Courtney Thomas, public outreach coordinator for the Beaver Watershed Alliance, says that the assessment has been looking at a variety of things.
We're looking at areas of the river that have concerns or issues for water quality, and trying to identify landowners who are interested in projects related to that through the watershed. So we're working with streamside landowners in particular and trying to identify places where best management practices could be put into place. with people who are interested in doing those things.
As part of the opportunity assessment, which is being conducted in conjunction with the Watershed Conservation Resource Center and the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, a series of public meetings is being held at areas in the West Fork watershed.
The goal of these meetings in particular is for us to kind of show the initial results of participation and best management practices that have been put into place over the past, 9 months that we've been conducting this project, as well as to show people, the priority areas that we have found through our project, and really to get feedback from the public about where other priority areas and places of concern are that we don't already know about, so that we can increase the resources that we are able to get for landowners and for the river to improve the water quality, ultimately of Beaver Lake, our drinking water source.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality and the Environmental Protection Agency have listed 17 miles of the West Fork of the White River as an impaired body of water because of excessive sediment in the waterway. The first meeting in the series is from 6 to 8 this evening at the Wenzel Community Center in West Fork. But other meetings will be held over the course of the next few weeks in Brentwood, Fayetteville, Greenland, and Winslow.
State and local officials gathered yesterday in Alma to officially designate a stretch of Interstate 540 between Alma and Missouri as part of Interstate 49. During the ceremony, state highway officials issued renewed calls to finish building the interstate, not just from Alma to Fort Smith, but all the way south to Texarkana. Previous estimates have suggested the cost of finishing construction of Interstate 49 through western Arkansas would be at least $3 billion.
Another candidate has stepped into this year's race for Fayetteville City Council. Philip McKnight, who has served on the city's Parks and Recreation Advisory Board and was previously treasurer of the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, has announced his intention to run for the Ward 4, Position 1 seat, currently held by Rhonda Adams. Adams isn't seeking re-election this year, but McKnight will have to defeat Mike Emery, an employee of the Washington County Animal Shelter and Air Force veteran, in the election for the seat on the council.
The Fort Smith Fire Department is receiving federal assistance to purchase new firefighting equipment. Members of Arkansas's congressional delegation yesterday announced the allocation of nearly $690,000 in Department of Homeland Security grant funding to the fire department to buy face pieces and self-contained breathing equipment used when firefighters enter a burning building.
Forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies tonight with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, with overnight lows from 66 in northwest Arkansas to 70 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly sunny with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs from 84 to 87. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of overnight showers, lows around 70. This is Ozarks at Large. When it comes to education, Common Core state standards and universal pre-kindergarten seem to be in the forefront. Early childhood education begins even earlier than pre-K, as young as 6 weeks of age. As more and more mothers return to the workforce shortly after giving birth, and those children's grandparents remain in the workforce until an older age, more and more infants, toddlers, and preschoolers are spending their days in a child care facility. The Division of Child Care and Early Childhood Education at the Arkansas Department of Human Services regulates these facilities. According to that organization, regulations for facilities are reviewed as the state legislature passes laws that would affect them, such as no smoking in or around certain buildings or the emergency preparedness law. The last time a change in requirements like this was required was in 2011. The rules, however, have not received an unsolicited overhaul in 45 years. Until now. David Griffin is the Associate Director of Licensing.
Those have not changed. There have been no major revisions since the law passed in 1969. That's 45 years ago. We have kept pace in Arkansas with basic health and safety standards, and we rank well nationally because of the health and safety issues. But when you look at programming, appropriate curriculum, qualification and training for staff and directors, staff-child ratio, those core licensing issues have been unchanged since 1969.
Griffin says the comparison nationally is not a numbers game, But it is reflective of where Arkansas stands with states with similar economic standing. As the state is lagging, the department has proposed various changes to the child care and early childhood education requirements. It is a lengthy process that has been going on for a few months, and one that will end when they take the proposed changes before the Arkansas Early Childhood Commission next month. The commission, comprised of a variety of representatives of stakeholders from around the state, has oversight on all rules and regulations. The proposed requirements have been taken out for several public hearings and remain open for comment through June 30th. Griffin says he and others are still in the process of going through all of this information to look at where changes need to be made, as they do want to be sensitive to the needs and wants of child care providers throughout this process. When and if the commission grants approval, they will go back through the legislative subcommittees, such as the Joint Committee on Children and Youth and the Rules and Regs Committee, before final promulgation. Pending final approval, new regulation booklets will be printed and sent to all child care providers in the state, after which they will be given 60 days before beginning enforcement activity. One of the proposed requirements that is being revisited per public comment regards facility directors, and that they will all have to have a college degree either in childhood education or a degree in anything in experience in childhood education.
We have had some concerns from across the state that having a degree requirement and locking it into that may be difficult for small programs in rural areas. So one of the things we're doing right now is we're revisiting that particular proposal and looking at if there might be a third option that would combine some formalized training with maybe either an AA degree or some other type of certification in lieu of a degree.
Currently, within this proposed requirement, anyone who has previously qualified or has been employed as a director, either currently or in the past, will maintain their qualifications, thus softening the impact by grandfathering them in. Across the state, there are a variety of types of child care facilities, from the federally funded, the mom and pop, corporate run, to the stay-at-home mom keeping her own children, plus a few extra. Griffin says the requirements for each are the same, but they are trying to build in some flexibility to help the smaller facilities or those in rural areas. Another requirement that could potentially hurt smaller operations is a reduction in the teacher-to-child ratio. For the youngest ones, it would move from one teacher for six kids to one to five. As with much of their research, Griffin says they looked to similar states.
We invariably found out that the way that they did that, the way that they kind of softened the blow to move forward in that area, is to grandfather in, for a limited period of time, existing providers. And we have built that in on that one. At this point, the grandfather clause is stated as existing providers would not have to meet the new ratios for a period of about 2 years past the implementation date, whatever that ends up being.
He did say that Arkansas is one of only five states in the nation that still has a 1-to-6 ratio. Every other state, other than the other four, is doing much better. Positive and frequent interaction between teachers and infants and toddlers is very critical and can shape the rest of a child's life and education. It is difficult to meet these interaction requirements because teachers could spend so much time meeting the basic needs, like changing diapers, putting the babies down for naps, or feeding, which doesn't leave a lot of time for intellectual stimulation, unless those ratios are lowered. Federal-funded early childhood program Head Start's performance standards are within the National Head Start Act of 1981. Embedded in that is that all facilities must also follow state licensing requirements. Brenda Zedlitz is the Director of Children's Services for the Economic Opportunity Agency of Washington County, which operates 8 Head Start locations in the county. She says that the program has high standards and is already exceeding the proposed requirements.
For early Head Start, there's the requirement that your ratio is 4 infants, toddlers to 1 teacher caregiver. And our classrooms, we can have up to 18 per teacher, but we like to cap that off at 15 just for quality of services. And it depends on your ages of your children. If you've got 18 4-year-olds almost turning 5, that's a lot different than 18 3-year-olds who've just come out of the early Head Start classroom. So we have a lot of latitude in our ratio and how we are able to manage our classroom size for quality.
As many who work in education do, Zedlitz has a passion for her job and concurs that brain development is crucial at this early age and thrives on relationships and attachments with adults.
I mean, we're real big on making sure that classroom interactions between the child and the staff are quality, and they have the time to actually interact. And it's not just a babysitting daycare services, but there's quality interactions going on, because that's how the brain develops.
Corinne McDowell, school director of privately owned for-profit Cedar Crest Academy in Fayetteville, also does her best to keep the number of children to teachers as low as possible. But with teachers and assistants calling in sick or going on vacation, it can be difficult. But Cedar Crest's preference is to remain below the state standard. McDowell says the proposed changes could still put a burden on Cedar Crest financially.
Because we can have the ratio for one child, but the classroom licensing only allows us to have twice the ratio. So if we have six to one ratio, we can only have 12 kids in the room, even if it's big enough for 15. The 1-to-5 ratio is going to bring us down. Instead of being able to have 12 kids in the room, we'll only be able to have 10. And so financially, in this hallway alone, we're going to lose 8 kids. And so that's roughly about $5,800 a month in tuition that we'll be losing because of the new ratios. And you know, we'll adapt and we'll make it work, but it's gonna be a challenge.
2 degreed teachers are in the infant and toddler hallway, serving as leads and mentors to all 4 classrooms. The preschool hallway houses a degreed teacher in each classroom, upholding the curriculum of the national owner Phoenix Children's Academy. Cedar Crest is just 2 years old, the newness perhaps putting them at an advantage to some providers. The building was designed with the National Infant Toddler Environmental Rating Scale and Early Childhood Environmental Rating Scale in mind. The building has a very rustic and cabin-like look and is complete with 36 cameras throughout. The security is not a requirement, but it is becoming the norm among newer facilities. Of the proposed requirements, one does look directly to the building and the facilities. It's in regards to playground safety, and it will affect Cedar Crest's current equipment on their 4 playgrounds. They have 1 for each age group.
Currently, the regulations require that any equipment that where the children can stand that's 2 feet up off the ground has to have the use areas, they call them use zones, the wood chip areas. But now it's going to be any stationary equipment where they're above ground level, period, at all, even if it's just a couple of inches. So that might affect, you know, a couple of our pieces.
McDowell has a degree in education and has been working in early childhood since 1990, herself serving as a licensing specialist for the state, going into facilities just like this one, making sure they're following the rules. DHS works on a trimester system, visiting every 3 months. Zedlitz at Head Start has been in the field since 2002 and has also served as a licensing specialist. She says the public awareness of the importance of the early years on critical childhood development in just the 12 years since she came into the area has really grown, but that there's also more of a demand for childcare as women have more of a place in the workforce, saying childcare isn't just a place for the kids to go while parents are at work. Quality matters, and help for the smaller providers is necessary.
I feel for the business owners who are having to make these adjustments. Again, I think there needs to be some sort of system of subsidizing childcare. Every childcare needs to be quality. Every child needs that quality experience. Parents have to work. Parents have to make a living to provide for their children, and we need a way to make sure those children are receiving what they need while those parents are being responsible parents to provide for their families.
Tanya Williams, director of the Division of Child Care and Early Childhood Education at Arkansas DHS, says programs with high quality standards make a difference and set examples for the rest of the state, and that's what they're trying to build.
These are minimum licensing standards. They're not equal or equitable to Arkansas Better Chance or Head Start, but it's the beginning foundation of helping the field to understand what you're doing in your program and what you're doing in those classrooms matter. You know, let's set the stage for a good one. And so, you know, there's a lot of evidence in all of that, and we have really good information now that in settings where people are not using high standards, the children are not performing as well as they go into public education, and that's sort of unconscionable.
A public comment period for the proposed requirements is open through June 30th. Information is available at arkansas.gov/childcare. For information on the childcare and education programs at Cedar Crest Academy, cedarcrestnwa.com. And for more information on Head Start programs, EOA.com. headstart.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
So you may not have been able to take a long lunch break or play hooky today to watch the U.S.-Germany World Cup match, but we do have sports with an international flair in the second half of today's OAL.
You're on a horse that's moving about 40 miles an hour while the ball is moving, and it's bouncing in the grass, and it's going all these different directions. It would be like having, like you standing in the back of a pickup while someone throws a baseball at you while you're driving past and trying to hit it.
Polo in Bentonville. We explain chuckers and more later on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Our resident chef, Kathy Gunn, says this time of year is all about fish.
Not just fish.
Not just fish.
Summer fish.
What's the difference?
Well, it's interesting. You don't tend to think of something like fish and seafood as being seasonal, but in fact, it very much is.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to 91.3 FM.
Every year, a select group of Arkansas elders decides to obtain their GED, or General Equivalency Diploma. This spring, a Madison County minnow farmer was among this year's graduating class. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Inside his bait and tackle shop, Leon Broyles walks between several gurgling concrete tanks, grabs a net, and gathers up a half dozen fat catfish from the fresh pumped creek water. Patrons come to War Eagle Minnow Farm on Highway 23 south of Huntsville to purchase bait and live fish. Leon reads from a price list mounted on the wall.
And there is different sized minnows, goldfish, chatfish. And we used to be able to get crawdads and tuppets here. Can't find them anymore.
Worms? You sell worms?
Yeah. Worms, ice cream, pop.
Place for both kids and grown-ups, candy and fish. Outside, three large ponds are stocked with catfish for those wanting to catch their supper. Leon takes a seat at a picnic table outside next to the water. Behind him on the 40-acre parcel, off in the distance, stand six turkey houses, which his son operates for Cargill. His people came to America from Germany in the early 1600s, Leon says. His father was born in Oklahoma Indian Territory. Leon was raised in Lawton. He turns 79 this month and spends most of his time doing woodwork up at the house in Marble. His wife, Anna Sue, mostly runs the minnow farm now.
I moved here in 1971. And she and I got married in 1972. We've finished raising our family here.
Leon would start his family in Nevada after moving there in 1953 with his parents at the age of 17. As a high school dropout to work in a titanium smelter. The money was good, but could have been better, he said, had he secured a high school diploma. That would have been his ticket into management. Instead, he decided to leave the smelter eventually and try his luck back east.
I like it. Well, I had an aunt and uncle at Green Forest. And when I was a kid, we'd jump from Oklahoma to visit. And I thought this was the finest place in the world.
Leon moved his family to Marble in 1973 and opened up a DX service station with his brother in Huntsville. He and Anna Sue raised five children, eight grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren, all of them boys. But it was his grandson, Bailey Cotton, who suggested at their weekly Thursday night supper out together that Pawpaw should consider taking his GED. Bailey, who works full-time in Huntsville School District as a lead computer technician, was out of town during the minnow farm visit, so spoke by phone.
Really? I mean, I just sort of said it as a, you know, off-the-wall comment. I didn't expect him to, you know, do anything, but, I mean, heck, he'd been out of, you know, out of high school for 60 years, so I really didn't expect anything, so he didn't say much about it after I said that, and I think maybe he said, well, maybe I'll look into it or something, but then the next thing I know, I don't know, I guess it was about 2 months ago, maybe two and a half, that we were at dinner one night and he handed me this card and I opened it and it was an invitation to graduation and I wasn't sure what he was doing with one. And so then as I got to reading on further down the invitation, it was for for him and his graduation ceremony for his GED diploma.
Bailey said he and the rest of the family which had been kept in the dark, were stunned that Leon actually did it.
I just decided I'd surprise him, and I did.
Mr. Broyles attained his GED in just over 4 months, starting this past January.
I spent more time at it than most kids. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoyed learning this time.
And he needed time to brush up on his computer skills to learn the new Common Core Online GED coursework.
It worked. I knew how to move the mouse around, so it worked. You didn't have to do much typing.
This is a man who grew up trapping mice, not holding them, but he says he loves a good challenge. 10 years ago, he taught himself to break a horse and to operate a bulldozer. Recently, he's tackled his family genealogy. And this winter, he spent his days indoors studying science, math, writing, geography, history, some of which he's lived, he said, and algebra, which turned out to be his favorite. Not bad for a guy only versed in just arithmetic.
I was pretty good just adding and subtracting when I was going to school. But when they started putting the alphabet in there, that was different. It was strange. It was, you know, like speaking another language. And I don't speak another language.
Mr. Broyles gives credit to his teacher, Julie Garrett, who teaches GED in the Huntsville School District. To earn his GED credential, Leon had to pass a 7-hour-long test in math, reasoning, language arts, science, and social studies, proving his skills in communicating, processing information, problem solving, and critical thinking. And he had to meet or exceed the performance of the top 60% of traditional graduating high school seniors. Statewide, according to the most recent count, 40 out of 54 Arkansans age 60 years and older managed to attain their GED. The Broyles family gathered at North Arkansas Community College in Harrison a few weeks ago to watch Leon, dressed in a burgundy cap and gown, walk for his diploma.
It felt good. And I was sort of surprised that I passed, but I felt good about it. But what really made me feel good was when we went over to the college to get the diploma, is my kids were there and some nieces were there just to pat me on the back. And that was the finest night I've had. And surprisingly enough, when I went through the line, the professors stood up to congratulate me. And I lost my way. I had a leader in front of me. That was a little embarrassing, but I enjoyed it, and I appreciated the fact that they stood up.
You see, Leon Broyles is diagnosed with macular degeneration, making his achievement that much more remarkable. After graduation, the family celebrated at a local steakhouse.
And I got a free meal, served by the manager.
Aside from the perks of a high school diploma, Leon Broyles also learned one other big lesson.
You know, I enjoyed learning. And I didn't enjoy it. I knew everything when I was 17. And I know enough now to know that I didn't know everything then.
For a while, Mr. Broyles toyed with the idea of going on to college, but he scrapped that for the moment. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the GED, search the Arkansas Department of Career Education at ace.arkansas.gov.
Today it is Thursday, June 26, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz, and with me now, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I know more about visual art than I do music, but not a whole heck of a lot more.
Okay.
So when I run into something that I really love, I can't wait to tell you about it. Have you ever seen Christina Mariotti's art?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Love it.
Yeah, I do, too. I'd love to have one of her pieces.
It's time traveling. in visual art. Kind of.
Reminds me a little of Van Gogh-ish.
Yeah. Well, she creates these rooms or buildings that might be from one time period and then places in them a woman who might be from a completely different time period. It's sort of, you know, the TARDIS of Northwest Arkansas art.
I see.
It's really fun. And she has a solo show going up at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale that will be up the month of July. It opens July 9th, actually. It's called Women in Rooms.
There you go.
And also on show is Taylor Shepherd's Pareidolia, which is a fascinating concept. And there will be a reception from 6 to 8 on July 24th. So you could plan ahead, go see The Sound of Music at ACO, see the art, and then go back on the 24th and talk to them about it.
Okay.
And we'll
good.
Remind you.
Okay. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley. Coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we'll have the one and only Eden Brent on the show. And Poppy Tooker will continue her look at food and the blues. That's coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Listen to Beale Street Friday nights at 8 on 91.3 FM.
A vast Lawbaw jumps into his backyard swimming pool, wearing swim trunks and goggles as he readies to swim a half mile. Vess is 79 years old and a U.S. Marine Corps veteran. He served two tours in the Vietnam War. Each day, he swims the 45 laps it takes to make up that half mile. Well, it's really just 44 laps, but he always swims one extra in case he miscounts. While swimming, he thinks of nothing and likens it to meditation.
A lot of people have PTSD, and they treat it with, you know, by going to sessions at the hospital and everything like that. For any problems I have, swimming and church make the difference.
Vess is part of a growing and aging veteran population, and though he recognizes the benefits exercise has on his own wounded body, many veterans need a little encouragement to get moving. And so the National Veterans Golden Age Games were formed in 1986, with the first being held in Albany, Georgia, as an outgrowth of the Division of Veterans Affairs Geriatric Program, with the goal of the veterans to live a healthy and long life. Carol Kick with the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks.
28 years they've been going very strong, trying to get our veterans to, as I say, get up off the sofa and do something. We want them exercising, we want them eating right, learning how to take their meds, and that sort of thing. And very important is the socialization that comes with the games, with hosting the games. Many of these vets have been coming for 25 and more years, and they see their old friends every year, and that, of course, is very important.
Carol is normally the chief of voluntary service at the Fayetteville VA, but has been serving as the chair of the local organizing committee for the 28th annual National Veterans Golden Age Games for the past year, as they will take place in Fayetteville beginning this weekend. After hosting the National Veterans Creative Arts Festival 3 years ago, the Fayetteville VA thought the Golden Age Games should be next. Though with around 800 participating veterans this year, it is much larger than the 125 3 years ago. The games are Olympic in style, and there was a need to find facilities to host each event, like golf, shooting, swimming, and track. Though the games are headed by the National Veterans Office in Washington, D.C., Carol is the boots on the ground, so to speak, arranging all of the locations and finding community partners. Veterans will be coming from all over the nation and its territories and will stay in dorms on the University of Arkansas campus and eat in the Fulbright cafeteria there. Many games will also be played on campus, but participants will be bused to Bella Vista to play golf on the Berkshire course, to Fastlane Entertainment for bowling, and to Walker Park for horseshoes, showing the visiting vets Northwest Arkansas and its hospitality. Carol describes typical track events.
They will be doing a power walk and then a precision walk. The power walk is, I believe, the heel or toe has to be on the ground at the same. It's a thing where they watch their feet on the ground. The precision walk is the where they will predict how long it will take them to do their power walk. So they'll do power walk first, and then they'll come back and say, it's going to take me 2 minutes, 29 seconds to do this distance, and the vet who comes closest to their prediction will win the precision walk. So that's the track.
As the host site, Fayetteville was able to choose an event that would be typical to the area.
So we picked fishing. They will be doing fly tying, and then we will also do fly casting, teaching them how to cast out there on the field that's out there by the dorm. So they're very excited about coming to Arkansas and they're fishing.
The wide variety of games ensures many veterans can and will participate. Any veteran who receives their care at a VA and is 55 years of age or older can register for the games. They are required to participate in two events, but no more than four, which was somewhat disappointing to Vess.
Well, I'm in four events, the track, cycling, shooting, and my only complaint is that they limited me to three swimming events instead of four. They had four events and I wasn't able to swim all four of them.
Judging will be done by national officials who can be spotted by their lime green t-shirts. Over 900 medals will be awarded to men or women in different age divisions, like 55 to 59, 60 to 64, and so on to 85 plus. And there's also different categories: ambulatory, wheelchair, and visually impaired. As Carla Carmichael, National Veterans Golden Age Games Director, says, there is something to be gained by winning.
Since 2004, the National Veterans Games has been a qualifier for the National Senior Games, which is a member of the U.S. Olympic Committee. And through this partnership, our gold, silver, and bronze medalists and the certain events have an opportunity to compete further among Americans' elite senior athletes.
This is the first time for Fayetteville veterans to participate in the games, yet over 20 were interested and are doing so. Vess hopes to participate again next year, though he will be in the next age group, 80 to 84, and hopes that it is somewhere nice, like Puerto Rico or Guam. Though he has received his care at a veterans facility since leaving the Marines in 1969, he had yet to participate in a veterans organization or group until 2005, when he found the Military Order of the Purple Heart, in which he is now very active. A former lawyer, he serves as the national organization's judge advocate and travels around the country meeting with his comrades. He was wounded in Vietnam, and it was through the organization that he met again three others with whom he was hospitalized all those years ago. Friends and his exercise are very important to him, serving as an inspiration for others.
Well, when I was wounded, I lost part of a kneecap, and if I don't exercise, the knee stiffens up on me. And so since that time, I've been swimming, as I said, nearly every day, a half mile.
To watch Vess swim freestyle or butterfly, head to the Hyper Building on the University of Arkansas campus next week. The event aims to be captivating with many of the participants in the 85-plus age division. An opening ceremony will take place June 29th at 10 a.m. inside Barnhill Arena. It will be similar to the Olympics, with flags of all 50 states and the territories marching in, complete with the torch lighting. After a lunch, the games will begin with checkers, dominoes, and table tennis. A schedule for this year's National Veterans Golden Age Games can be found at va.gov under special events, with events running through July 3rd. To volunteer, call 521-5776. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callum.
And I'm Christina Karnatz. Still ahead, it's kind of like soccer, with the aim to get a ball into the other team's goal, but on horseback. Kyle introduces us to the sport of polo.
Obviously, since we're talking right now, we're not watching the soccer
match. No, we're not.
Anyway, the American Alliance of Museums has awarded a Gold Muse Award for the top museum audio tour to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. It's the highest award a museum can receive for an audio tour. In 2013, Fayetteville Roots Festival founder Brian Hembree collaborated with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art to curate a companion audio tour for a temporary exhibit, This Land, picturing a changing America in the 1930s and 1940s. The audio tour includes music from 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival performers Threepenny Acre, who's been on the show, Ryan Spearman, Ben Bedford, Johann Wagner, who's been on the show, The Honey Dewdrops,
been on the show,
and Jack Williams,
been on the show.
Though the exhibit is no longer on display, a special encore of the audio tour via the Crystal Bridges app is available until July 10th.
Artemis Literature seeks submissions for its 10th anniversary issue. Poetry, short fiction, and creative essays, translations, visipo, and hybrid forms will be considered. However, visual art will not be considered for inclusion this time. Contributors must live in Arkansas or have ties to the state. Send 1 to 12 pages of creative work through Submittable at How about you email it to literature.artemis@gmail.com? Submissions close June 30th.
Why don't we put a link, too? Why don't we say we'll put a link on our Ozarks at Large
right.
page today?
It's that a mouthful.
It is. It's a long one, and you would not remember. Here's one thing you need to remember, ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
That's right.
You can send us story ideas, comments, but you can also, if you send us just an email that says, boy, I like to win stuff.
And yes. Whatever else you want to.
We have our usual Thursday giveaway. Now, here's what's involved. 4 vouchers to a future Northwest Arkansas Naturals game. You take these vouchers that we'll mail to you. You exchange them for best seats available that game. 4 passes to any Malco movie theater in the region.
Okay.
All right. Then, each of these 2 packages will also receive 4 tickets to a very special July 10th cinema event at Malco Movie Theaters. And this is at the Razorback Theater. So it's not any. It's Razorback Cinema on Steel Boulevard in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. It's for the sort of Mystery Science Theater 3000 riffing on Sharknado.
Sharknado. I haven't seen that.
It's horrible, but worth what's going to happen.
Okay.
They'll make fun of it, and you can watch it live happen. So those plus 2 tickets to any opera in the Ozarks performance that you want to go to.
Okay.
All of that. Like a week's worth of entertainment.
That's a lot. It really is.
So opera, movies, bad movies, but with fun commentary, and baseball.
Just send your name to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
And just say, boy, I want to win.
Yep.
If we could have a dream band on NPR's Ask Me Another, I think they'd sound like this.
Istanbul, Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, Constantinople.
Join me, Ophir Eisenberg, with special guests, They Might Be Giants, and Radiolab's Jad Abumrad and Robert Krolwich for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. Game on. Even
old New York. Ask Me Another begins Saturday at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
The intense fervor over the World Cup has spilled into Northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley. Just check out some of the bars and restaurants around here during the U.S. matches. And though football still reigns supreme for sheer number of fans in this area, the sports menu continues to diversify.
Now for Northwest Arkansas Polo Club. Let's hear it for our home team. In our first position, we've got Manuel Gomez.
Sunday, the home fans were out on a manicured field along Price Coffee Road near downtown Bentonville for the opening moments of the home season for the Northwest Arkansas Polo Team. John Wilson, the president of the Polo Club, sums up the sport for the uninitiated in a concise way.
You're on a horse that's moving about 40 miles an hour while the ball is moving and it's bouncing in the grass and it's going all these different directions. It would be like having, like you standing in the back of a pickup while someone throws a baseball at you while you're driving past and trying to hit it.
The 7-minute periods of play are called chuckers, and there are 7-minute intervals between each chucker. Points are registered when the team sends the ball through a designated goal at either end of the field. A few days before the crowds and teams arrived for the Sunday match, John Wilson sat at the empty field on the tailgate of a truck, and he explained that though polo is rather new to this region, it's easy for spectators to pick up the basics.
It's like watching a hockey game on horseback. It's very high speed. When the ball goes through the goal, it's a point. And it's not much more than that.
There are 4 players on the field at a time, plus 2 umpires on horseback, and they follow the ball over a large field, 300 yards long, 160 yards wide. If there is any drawback to polo as a possible spectator sport, it is the other side of the field can seem a long way away. But the game has almost everything else Americans seem to want in their sports: speed, teamwork, and scoring.
It also has physical contact. Part of polo, as opposed to horse racing, is you're bumping and checking and while you're running up and down the field, and it's very high action. It's very, very much a spectator sport. In addition, the spectators come out, and it has a lot of that Kentucky Derby kind of thing to it too, where the men get to wear bow ties, the women wear the big hats, and at halftime, after the second chucker, everybody goes out and they stomp divots.
On Sunday, the crowd began arriving by 11 in the morning and setting up tents to be close to the action. Dana Donaldson was among the first to arrive Sunday, and he had a field-side seat. Dana has been around horses since he was a child, and he coached the Oklahoma State University polo team for 14 years. He's also played the game all over the world: Argentina, Australia, Dominican Republic, and New Zealand.
Oh, it's an adrenaline rush. You get going full bore, and it's there's nothing feels quite as good as getting a good long shot, you know, against a good team.
He says those long shots are satisfying for both players and fans, but the more you know about the game, the more you watch, the more you can also appreciate the subtle defense. There are maneuvers like bumping or hooking a defender can use to impede access to the ball, but a defender has to be thinking ahead all of the time.
You want to be on what's he called his offside. The offside is his right hand. The near side is his left hand. The player has to carry his mallet in the right hand, as of about 1964 in the United States. So his strongest shots are on his right-hand side or the offside.
Does that put left-handed people at a disadvantage?
Yes, it does. But I know quite a few left-handed players who you don't cut them any slack, I promise you that.
There are institutional rules for safety about mallet use and when and where a player can engage in the action. An invisible line follows the ball and its trajectory down the field, allowing the players who hit the ball to have a sort of right-of-way access to eliminate potentially dangerous situations. The ball can become airborne, but it weighs just 4 ounces. And not to lessen the abilities of the humans involved, but the majestic athletes are really the horses. Kevin Gardner, a member of the Northwest Arkansas team, says his horse Rocky is his partner.
He's been playing polo longer than I have, which is great. He helps me a lot. And
seriously, he helps you?
Yes. He's been playing so long that when he sees the ball go by, he'll go after it. and he's very calm and reliable, and he's a great animal.
John Wilson, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Polo Club and a player on the team, agrees that without a relationship between animal and player, there's no success.
You have to be able to communicate well with your horse. Your horse has to be understand what it is that you're trying to do. And the horse is the real athlete in the match. They're the ones that are doing all the running, and they are very, very highly trained. They're very highly conditioned and very highly bred. As a player, I'm on the horse trying to communicate where we need to be in order to pick up the play as it comes along. But you'll see, by and large, the horse is the actual athlete.
The Northwest Arkansas Polo Club wants this sport to increase here in popularity for both spectators and possible players. The matches are presented without pretense, and Susan Kohler is an expert at play-by-play, letting novices in the crowd understand exactly what they're seeing take place. Polo is also an equal opportunity sport. Sunday, men and women, and in the juniors' exhibition, boys and girls, play at the same time. There are players taller or lighter than others, and, at least here, experienced players are assisting newcomers. Lorena Gomez says she brought her tent and picnic food to the event Sunday so she could watch a new player, her husband, Manuel.
My husband is playing polo. He is from Mexico, and we just got here, and so now he's into polo.
John Wilson says there are more players in Arkansas than you might expect, and the local club is developing younger players as well. Before Sunday's feature match, the juniors exhibition included several teenagers, including Robson McCartney.
Yeah, it's kind of intimidating, and especially because you have to take the horse's safety into everything you do on the horse, and you really just, you know, you have this fear of failure, so you just have to go out on a limb and take the swing.
It should be noted that Robert did just fine Sunday, including scoring a goal. The Polo Club hopes to have at least one feature match on the home field in Bentonville each month through early fall. You can learn more about how to get to the field, the schedule of events, and how the game is played at nwapolo.com. And Kevin Gardner says the club has made one more very visible effort to make Northwest Arkansas feel comfortable getting to know polo. The local team's colors are a familiar red and white.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think we tip our hat to the red and white colors of team sports here in Northwest Arkansas. So I think there was little choice but to pay homage to our Razorbacks.
This is Ozarks at Large.
We got 30 seconds left. Bobby making a big breakaway down to that west goal, trying to see if he can capitalize on this. Everybody's after him.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Bella Vista.
And time to hand out some accolades. No, actually, the accolades have already been handed out. Time to tell you about the accolades in order for some on the University of Arkansas campus. This spring, several faculty members and students in the Industrial Engineering Department received awards and honors from the Institute of Industrial Engineers. The Institute of Industrial Engineer Honors and Awards Banquet was held earlier this month during the Industrial and Systems Engineering Research Conference in Montreal. 11 U of A faculty members, one staff member, 14 students attended the conference. At the event, Kim Lascala-Needy, interim dean of the graduate school and holder of the 21st Century Professorship in Engineering, was recognized and honored as the IIE immediate past president. Interim department head Ed Pohl was named an IIE fellow. That's the highest classification of membership. John White, chancellor emeritus and distinguished professor of industrial engineering, received the Wellington Award. So congratulations.
Mm-hmm. And a UA chemistry professor has been found to be one of the world's most cited researchers in 2014. Jingyi Chen, assistant professor of physical chemistry in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, is included in the list of the world's most highly cited researchers. The list is compiled annually by Thomson Reuters, publisher of the Citation Index and Web of Science. It has only 198 entries in chemistry, in addition to 195 entries in biochemistry. To make the list, scientists must rank among the top 1% most cited for their subject field and year of publication, earning them the mark of exceptional impact. If you want to see the complete list, you can view that at highlycited.com.
Top 1% in the world. That's not just a national list. That's a global list.
Right.
So congratulations.
Yeah, that's big. That's
yeah,
big.
It is. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz. We'll both be back tomorrow.
Yes, we will.
For an all-new Friday edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes.
We'll go ahead and end today's show with this song. It's Mud Puddles by Lincoln Durham. He'll be at the Rib Room in Fort Smith Saturday evening with special guest Tyrannosaurus Chicken. The gates for that show will open at 6. The show starts at 9. You can learn more at ribroom.com. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good Thursday.
I'm a woman who's much too good for me. Out in churches, they don't step in the puddles for fear they'll fill it up with their own blood. Out in churches, they don't step in the puddles for fear they'll fill it. Old hat here 25.